very grateful that the Lord has blessed us with a beautiful day to be together and for everybody's willingness and desire to be out this morning. It's just always an encouragement, friends. Very thankful for you. Good to have the Watsons with us. Hopefully they're trying to make their way back over here. I hope that's what's happening here. But regardless, it's good to have them with us. Good to see you, friends. Very, very thankful for your faith and your love for God that's brought you out. I want to share a thought for you from Daniel chapter 3, when the people of God were in captivity. They were in Babylonian captivity, taken from their homeland of Judah, taken off to Babylon, and they are at the mercy of the most powerful man in the world, King Nebuchadnezzar. He is dominating the world at this time. And as a man who had all power in the world, he gave the command for people to bow down to this image. And he had erected this image in Daniel chapter 3, where it says that the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits, its width 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. We understand a cubit is roughly 18 inches. So you're looking at something that's roughly 90 feet tall. I don't know what that would be equivalent to in this area, a structure 90 feet tall. But this is something that could be seen for great distances, 9 feet wide. And he has laid this out in gold, and he is telling people to bow down when the music plays, that at his command, the people were to pay homage to this golden image. And so everybody was doing this. Everybody who was captive, everybody within the land was doing this. And it says in the context that of all the people who were there, even all the Hebrews who were there, only three decided not to bow down. And it says that this was reported to Nebuchadnezzar in verse 12. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. And so this was something that was not going to go well with this king, who had already exercised his power in even establishing this statue and then given this great command. And he even warned them that if you don't do this, I am going to burn you alive. That's what it says in verse 6. He had told the people that whoever hears the music and doesn't bow, it's not like you're going to get a slap on the wrist or even a $10 fine. You're going to be burned alive. And that is by far, it has to be the most horrible way to die. You know, for this man to do this recently at the White House to show his disgust for the government or the president, even for him to burn himself alive like that, take his life, it's hard to imagine that somebody would be that deprived in their thinking. Well, that's what's happening here. Okay, the people are told, you're going to be thrown into a furnace. And so these Hebrews, these Jews, three of them decided not to do this. Okay, and they were especially offensive to Nebuchadnezzar because they were part of the government. They were part of representing the people to him. And so it's reported to him, and so he brings them in, as it says in verse 13, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now if you are ready, at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace, and who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, Let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression of his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their garments, and were cast in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. This is just a tremendous story. You know, to think about, and that this would be something just amazing to see, is just as a story in general, but then to see all the implications behind it. The hand of God. Think of it though. Again, these people weren't told that their property was going to be seized. That would have been something. They weren't told that, again, they would be incarcerated for 10 years. That's not what they were told. They were told, you either do this or you die, and you die a very painful death. And they took a stand, and they stood up against the king. And of course, his rage was out of control. And there's a tremendous lesson or two to learn from this display of faith that these men demonstrated that day. Because obviously, this happened and God has told us about it. He's preserved it for us in this profound book so that we can go back to this example and that we can learn from it. And that we ourselves can have the type of faith these guys had when you and I are up against the fiery furnaces of our life. Because the fact of the matter is, your faith is going to be tested. And it's not going to be tested just once, it's going to be continually tested. Your faith will always be tested at any age, any stage of life. You're going to have a furnace that you have to confront. Where you're either going to keep God first in life, or you're going to bow to the will of men and the influences of the devil. And I think that these men can show us, these young men at that, can remind us of the importance of faith and what it means to have valor, what it means to have courage, what it means to have integrity, and what it means to have guts and commitment to be faithful unto death, and you will receive the crown of life. I will give you the crown of life, is what Jesus promises. From these men, I see this tremendous lesson of faith teaching us that faith has a price. It's not enough to just simply say, yeah, I believe in God. I'm one of His people. I'm a Jew. I'm a Hebrew. I'm among His family. And for us, of course, we are in Him through Christ. But it's not enough to just simply be identified as a child of God or a servant of God. It's not enough to just simply make that proclamation, which is good because not everybody does that. That proclamation has consequence. That devotion has consequence. When you made the decision to put your faith in God and to serve Him through Christ, it has created more accountability for you in life. There's a price you have to pay to keep that statement, to keep that declaration in your life. Faith has a consequence. And these men had this tremendous faith, even though they were tested in ways that are hard for us to imagine. And keep in mind, again, these men were part of the ruling class. They at least had authority in the civil government. Okay? That's what these men were. And the fellow satraps and the fellow leaders among the people were the ones who took this report to Nebuchadnezzar. But notice in chapter 2 that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were not just some average guys. Okay? These were people who had been given authority within the government. On the Hebrew side, but at least they had authority connected to the Babylonian government. It says in chapter 2, verse 49, Daniel petitioned the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So here are people, okay, who had been exalted in a way by Nebuchadnezzar, been given this privilege of leadership among the people, and they were exalted by the king, and of course at the request of Daniel, but he still gave it to them. And so for them to take that authority, to take that position, and then to say to the king himself, I don't care what you say, you can burn us if you want, we're not worshiping your God. Our God may deliver us, he may not, but we're not going to worship your God and the one that you made. That takes a lot of courage. That takes a lot of conviction. And something like that doesn't happen just overnight. That comes after days and days and days of being with God in prayer and meditation and in studying His will. This comes as a result of nurturing and developing a real faith in God. But you see, friends, they were willing to lay it all down. Not only their position in the community, but even their life itself. They were willing to lay it all down. And the reason they did this was not because they were not sensitive to fire. They could feel those flames in terms of just being an average person. It didn't mean that, you know, they could put their hand in a fire, any fire, and not feel it. They could feel those things. And they wanted a peaceful life and a prominent life just like you and I do. But they were willing to lay it all down, and the reason they laid it all down is because they had more conviction in the God of heaven. They had more faith in the God of heaven than this powerful man on earth. Friends, that's a real faith. It's not something you just simply say, as you've been taught to say in Bible class. This is a real faith that I truly believe. The God I serve is the maker of all life and the maker of earth and heaven, and He's the one I serve. And I do not serve your gods. That's a real faith. In Exodus, it says in chapter 20 that that was the type of response every Hebrew should have had. Every Jew should have been standing instead of just these three, because every Jew was taught from the law of Moses that you cannot bow down to images and still serve God. Exodus chapter 20, the law stated very plainly in verses 4 and 5 that God stated, you shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me. Now keep that in mind. From God's perspective, when you bow down to these things instead of serving Him, in His mind, you are hating Him. You are hating Him because you are preferring these over Him. Well, you know as well as I do, these three guys heard this. They knew that law. And they didn't just hear it, and they didn't just simply say, yeah, I believe that, I'm a believer in God. They took it to heart, and they let it define their life. And in defining their life, the time came when that faith was going to be tested. And it wasn't something that just simply lasted on the lips of their mouth. This was something that was real from the heart. They truly believed it, and they were willing to die for it. I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Now, every person who hopes to go to heaven has to make that statement. That's the great confession. But with the mouth, that confession is made, right? But it comes from where? With the heart. When we truly believe it from the heart, that I am convinced this one who came back from the dead, who died for me, for one, but he came back from the dead, this righteous, holy person, I believe he is the Son of God. I believe Jesus is the Son of God. Okay? What are we going to say when the Muslims surround us, and they have machetes in their hands, and they say, you either renounce your faith to Christ, you deny Him as God's Son, or we chop your head off. And please don't act like that doesn't happen. You know that happens in this world. It may not be a fiery furnace, but it's the equivalent of what these guys were up against. It's either your life or your faith. And these guys said, it's our faith. And to translate that, it would be equivalent to saying to the terrorists, saying, you do what you have to do. I am not going to deny my Lord. You do, with that machete, what you have to do. My God, who made me, is able to deliver me from your hand. But if he does not, and you take my life, so be it. I do not worship your God. And I do not worship your thoughts. I worship the God of heaven. And friends, that's the kind of faith we need to have. That's the kind of faith we need to be willing to take a stand with. And we might say, well, yeah, I'd do that. I'll lay down my life for the Lord, okay? Will you? What about the daily rejection we face in serving the Lord Jesus Christ, in upholding His will? Will we make that sacrifice? Will we be willing to endure those crosses and those trials in service to God? And if I will not do that, if I will not uphold the truth even when my friends and family reject me, or I might lose a job for it, or I might be incarcerated for it, if I won't bear those burdens, what makes me think I'm willing to walk through the fiery furnace? And that is that faith must be firm. There is no way in this world a person who is undecided about their allegiance to God is going to walk up those steps and jump into that flame. You have to be resolved already in your heart. He's the God I serve, and He's the God I'm going to stay loyal to. And these men were determined to stand. And that's what I love about their attitude. Their attitude was, because the king says, okay, well, maybe there's just been a misunderstanding. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give the orchestra a command to start playing, and we're going to give you another chance to make the right decision. And they said, well, we don't do what you have to do. Our decision is already made. We're going to serve God. And so their resolve was real. There was no need for them to have a second chance. You know what I really appreciate about these men is that the story of Daniel starts with these guys being young. They were the young people who were taken from the captives, the elite, among the royal family especially. And they were groomed and trained to serve Nebuchadnezzar in the government of Babylon. And even though that was the case, what you have here is an example of young people, possibly still, who had enough conviction to stand for the Lord. And this means something to me because we have young people here. We have people who are in that younger class who are still putting the Lord first and who are willing to exercise the same type of faith and devotion to the Lord. And we need to pray for these people each and every day. But these young people could have done like a lot of young people do, or any people who are in a situation of compromise. They could have easily said, well, everybody else is doing it. I mean, think of it. They look around and every Hebrew they know is hitting the dirt when the music plays. Everybody they know. They're all bowing down. And yet these guys say, no, we're not going to do this, even though everyone else is doing it. And that's a tremendous principle to remember. And that's why I appreciate those who keep God first at a young age. Because everyone around them is being carnal. Everyone around them is being immoral and influenced by the world. And yet those who are wise enough, and it is an act of wisdom, who are wise enough to see this at a young age, I love them and I appreciate them because it shows that they have the same character as these people right here. Well, these guys could have said another excuse. They could have said, well, I'm just too young to make a difference. I mean, what can I do? I'm not the old leader. I'm not the experienced servant of God. I can't do what he or she can do. Well, that didn't matter in this case. They were young enough, or at least maybe even old enough, to make a stand that day. Some might say, well, I'm away from home. No one knows us. You know, that happens. It's amazing what people do, how we're all tempted when we think no one else is looking, or at least no one else we know is looking, which is never the case. But they could have said that. We're away from home, it doesn't matter. Or they could have said, well, I'll make up for it for God in another. You know, this one, hey, we're talking about our life here. I'll get through this one, and then I'll do double duty down the road for God some other time. You know, but this one, come on now, this is life or death. They could have said that. Or they could have said, well, it's only an idol. Okay, God knows that within my heart, I'm bowing down to Him, and this just doesn't mean anything. It's all just for show to keep old Nebuchadnezzar off my back. They could have said that. And yet, despite all these reasonings and excuses, they did not bend because their faith was firm. Their faith was real. And again, what did God say about this? When you bow down to those graven images, you do what? You hate me. There was no way to justify this. There was no way to compromise. And they understood that. And even though everyone else in their nation hated God, these guys decided, not me. And that, again, is a source of encouragement to me. How much will you sacrifice to serve God? How much will you sacrifice to keep Him first in life? Well, when you go back to Habakkuk, and we read this earlier in our service, Habakkuk, now I know there were several prophets sent to the people of God at this time. Jeremiah was a big one, especially among the people of Judah. But Habakkuk was there as well. Okay, Habakkuk had his messages to the people of Judah. And it says this in Habakkuk chapter 3. Notice this in verse 17 through verse 19, where he says, though the fig tree may not blossom. Now again, keep in mind, here's the mindset of somebody who was dedicated to God no matter what. Okay? No matter what. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. He will make my feet, I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet, and He will make me walk on my high hills to the chief musician with my stringed instruments. And so God sends this man in to encourage the people with the perspective that even if it looks desperate around you, we're still going to put our faith and confidence in the Lord. I would like to think that these three men were influenced by that teaching. Though it may not look promising on the horizon, that's okay, because we do know God will eventually deliver and God will eventually provide. That's the type of devotion we have to have. We have to know that when we invest our life in serving God, it will pay off and it is worth the sacrifice. But keep in mind, it's something that requires everything of us. You cannot do this partially. You cannot fake real faith. It has to be everything or it is nothing. And that's what it says in Matthew chapter 13, that a person who's going to heaven has to be totally invested in this. Firm faith, laying down everything to keep the Lord first in life. And that's why Jesus said this in Matthew 13, verses 44 through 46, where He said, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid, and for joy over it he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. What's the story? The story is, here is somebody who is totally invested in the concept of going to heaven. They put their entire life into this. Their whole heart is in this. Or as we can see here, their entire faith is in it. I move all in on this, is what this means. I give my all to get to heaven. I hope we're there, friends. Because the furnaces are going to come. And they're going to test that statement. Yeah, I believe. Well, do you believe? When you have to lose everything to keep God first in life, will you still believe? Will you still love Him? Will you still be loyal to Him? These men show us it's possible. Came across a neat story years ago, and it just stayed with me, on the cost of discipleship. And it says, so when man finds Jesus, it cost him everything. Jesus has happiness, joy, peace, healing, security, eternity. Man marvels at such a pearl and says, I want this pearl. How much does it cost? The seller said it cost you everything you have. No more, no less, so anybody can buy it. The man said, I'll buy it. The seller says, well, what do you have? Let's write it down. The man says, I have $10,000 in the bank. Good, said the seller. $10,000. What else? Yeah, he said, I have nothing more. That's all I have. The man says, have you nothing more? Well, he says, I have some dollars here in my pocket. The seller says, how many? The man says, let's see, 30, 40, 50, 80, 100, $120. The seller says, that's fine. What else do you have? The man says, I have nothing else. That's all. The man, seller says, well, where do you live? The man says, I live in my house. Seller says, okay, the house too. Then you mean I must live in the garage? Oh, you have a garage too? Then the garage is mine as well. Do you mean then I must live in my car? The seller says, then you have a car? The man says, I have two. Seller says, good, they're both mine. What else do you have? Well, the man says, you have my house, the garage, the cars, the money, everything. What else? The seller says, are you alone in the world? The man says, no, I have a wife and two children. The seller says, okay, your wife and children are now mine. You mean everything? Yes, everything. The man says, I have nothing left now. I'm now all alone. The seller says, oh, wait, I get you too. Everything becomes mine. Wife, children, house, money, cars, everything, and you too. Now you can use all those things here, but don't forget, they are mine, and as are you. When I need any of these things you are using, you must give them to me because now I am the owner of these. Now friends, that's a beautiful way of describing what Jesus is calling us to. And I'm just simply saying this because the time's coming where that's either going to be real or it's not. Where are we going to say, we're going to say, okay, this life is God's. I am here to serve God, and everything I have is on loan from Him, and I believe that, or I'm going to bow down to try and hold on to these things in defiance of God. It's something to think about. I think another good point to make from this great story is that God stands with us. But as these men were thrown into the fiery furnace, we understand the story. It goes on to say in Daniel chapter 3 that God was with them. As it says in Daniel chapter 3 and verse 24, beginning, King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to the counselors, did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. He said, well, look, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. And we can understand the story, of course, how God was there in the fire with these men, and they were able to come out of this fire, as it says in verse 27, and they didn't even have the smell of smoke on their clothes because God delivered them from the fire. I simply make this point, friends. That's the God you serve. Okay, the God who chose that day to deliver these men from the fiery furnace is the same God you serve. Now, He may choose to deliver you from the furnace that you face, at least in this life. But one thing is for certain, whether that happens now or later, He wants us to trust Him. And He wants us to have faith in Him, knowing that eventually we will win and eventually we will have victory because that's the God we serve. I think of Isaiah, and notice the language here of Isaiah chapter 43, and it's possible that these men had heard this message. Because in Isaiah chapter 43, he makes the point of being able to withstand the fire for those who are faithful. It says in verse 1, but now thus says the Lord, Isaiah 43 verse 1, but now thus says the Lord who created you, O Jacob, He who formed you, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by your name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overflow you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, nor shall the flames scorch you, for I am the Lord your God. I just would like to think that these men had heard that. And they bought into it. Knowing God's able, He's powerful, but He will certainly deliver us one way or another. Before Paul died, he wrote 2 Timothy. And as he is preparing his own departure, he says in 2 Timothy chapter 4, in verses 16 through 18, Well, he said, at my first offense, no one stood with me, but all forsook me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, so that the message might be preached fully through me, and that all the Gentiles might hear. Also I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. And the Lord will deliver me from every evil work, and preserve me for His heavenly kingdom. To Him be glory forever and ever. Amen. And he's simply saying that, look, God has delivered me in times past, but he still knew that this time his life was coming to an end. But he says it's okay, because I'm still being delivered. I may not get to come back here and live like I want, but I'm going to be delivered. He has not abandoned me yet. He will not forsake me, and so I believe Him and I trust Him. Can you look into the furnace and say the same thing? This thing, whatever it is in my life, is scaring me half to death. It's testing everything within me to keep my faith in God. But I look at that fiery furnace and I choose to believe God has never forsaken me. He has led me thus far through life, and I know He will never abandon me. I may have to go through that fire, but I know He is there with me in the fire, and I trust Him. And I know one way or another, I am going to rise above this and be victorious, because God will never forsake me. That's the kind of faith we have to have, good friends. Because if we do, I make this last point, faith is rewarded. The men came out. Keep reading the story. It's a really neat account. The men came out, and of course Nebuchadnezzar changed his tune. Now he directed everybody to bow down and worship the God of heaven. But these men and their faith were the ones who led this new outlook of this king, because the king promoted them as a result of their faith. Now, was there any way that they could know that would happen? No, they didn't. In their heart, that wasn't happening. In their heart, they expected to be burned alive. There was no way they could possibly see verse 30 coming about. But because they had their faith, verse 30 did come about. There is no telling what blessings are on the other side of the furnace for you. There's just no telling what God has in store for you if you just keep your faith and you endure and you don't give up and you stay true to His Word. If you just endure, there is something waiting for you that you cannot possibly see at the moment. Faith is always rewarded. He is a God who rewards those who seek Him diligently. He will always reward those who have faith in Him. And I simply go to Revelation chapter 7 to wrap this up. In Revelation chapter 7, notice this, where Jesus is promising us victory. And here's what He says in verse 13 beginning. Then one of the elders answered and said to Him, "Who are these arrayed in white robes, and where did they come from?" And I said to him, "Sir, you know." So he said to me, "These are the ones who came out of the great tribulation and washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore they are before the throne of God and serve Him day and night in His temple, and He who sits on the throne will dwell among them. They shall neither hunger any more nor thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them, nor any heat. For the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne will shepherd them and lead them to living fountains of water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes." That's going to happen. But in order for it to happen for you, good friends, you have to have the willingness and conviction not to lose your faith when it is tested. To not lose your faith in God. Do you have what it takes to be thrown into the furnace? To actually be taken up the steps and thrown into that furnace? Or would you be a person who's being taken up saying, okay, play the music, I changed my mind, I'll go ahead and bow down. Now these guys went up. Well, what about us? Do we have it? Jesus says that those who are cowardly can't go to heaven. Revelation 21 and verse 8. He says that if whoever is ashamed of me and my words, I'm going to be ashamed of you. Mark 8:38. Or as it says in 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 13, "Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be willing to die for the Lord." And so I share these thoughts with you, good friends. You've listened very patiently, and I thank you. Paul said, having done all, stand. Don't bow, stand.